Tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 11th of June, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. As it's Thursday, it means we will be delving into the world of geopolitics today, and who better to do that with than Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org. Good day, Matt. How are you doing, sir?
Well, you know, the first half of 2026 was pretty rotten. I'm dedicated to the second half being much, much better. Unfortunately, we have to deal with this character here, who is just, oh, it's almost like I'm making him up.
Now, you're not mentioning your cat. You're not talking about your new cat here, are you? This large cat. That's not the person you're talking about.
No, I've talked about him. I've talked about him. Okay. He's all settled in. No, I'm talking about this guy here that we're going to be dealing with. I don't know where Cokie is. Foxy's here. He's my co-host for today. But Cokie is runs around constantly, and then he just collapses, and he falls asleep wherever he is.
Well, I'm not surprised, thinking about the size of him. He's going to get tired easily, isn't he, if he's one of those huge cats. This is a giant you've bought, isn't it? It's a giant cat.
Well, he's a kitten now, but when he grows up, if there any meth head wants to break into this house and he's casing it, he's going to see two cats. If he doesn't know what a Maine Coon is, he's going to say, these people are keeping wildcats as pets. I ain't breaking into this place. So that's what they look like. So, yeah, it's very exciting. That's how we're going to start off the second half of this year, and I feel great. Thank God. First half, I could give that back to the Indians. I don't, it was awful, but second half is going to be better.
Well, it's good to hear you. It's good to hear you being positive. And the news story that we have today as well, it just seems like a repeat of what we were talking about as what happened in Hungary recently with the Hungarian elections and with all the election meddling that went on. Election meddling that we've talked about before in Ukraine is just election meddling everywhere. And today we're going to be talking about election meddling in Armenia. And this really seems to have got your goat, Matt, if I may say so. You seem to be particularly peeved about this one. Do you want to just let us know why it is that you're so annoyed about this instance of election meddling?
Absolutely. We're talking about this Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan of Armenia. Now, Armenia might be small, but she's very strategic. She borders Iran, borders Georgia, borders Turkey. She's landlocked, but there's a lot going on, a lot of oil pipelines going through. But an entire region, autonomous region, was destroyed recently, and no one noticed. You know, this would be something like what happened in Kosovo, except all at once. Nagorno-Karabakh was totally wiped out. 100,000 Armenians driven out back to Armenia. And the Azeris, or those from Azerbaijan, moved in with Israeli assistance and just destroyed everything Christian there. And you know, colonized it, made it their own. They also have Turkish assistance, unfortunately. And the world didn't even notice. And the U.S. supports the prime minister of Azerbaijan, who was responsible for this, because he deliberately lost the war against Azerbaijan. And let the, roughly this time last year, when you were indisposed, unfortunately, I did a solo show on him, and it got my goat then. And there were elections on June 7th, where somehow the man who was responsible for the genocide of Nagorno-Karabakh was reelected. Can you imagine? It's obviously impossible. So the only way he could have been reelected is through total fraud. But there's a difference here. Pashinyan, usually, you know, we talk about color revolutions and people like that. They usually are devious or educated. This guy is uneducated. He's an ignoramus. He's very different from your typical color revolution, you know, appointee. He's extremely unpopular. His popularity ratings as of last year were about between 9 and 11%. And yet this guy allegedly got 49% in the legislative elections, his party. And, of course, he's now prime minister again. It is, according to the UN, a complete act of genocide that no one has noticed. It's a total humiliation of Armenia. And keep something else in mind. It's not just Turkey that's supporting Azerbaijan. It's also the Israelis. People don't know this, but in the recent war with Iran, Israeli fighters and bombers are taking off from Azerbaijan, not just Israel, because Azerbaijan is very, very close to Iran, right at its northern border. Azerbaijan today is almost a colony of Israel. But at the same time, the oil infrastructure is owned by Russia. So we have this very weird situation here that exists nowhere else. But it is impossible. You know, a huge part of Armenia was lost to the Turks. It was completely his fault. Everyone thinks it's his fault. And he gets reelected with 49% of the vote? It is inconceivable. Not to mention the economy is in a free fall. Unemployment is around 20% according to official statistics. Gravely in debt. And I just read this the other day. In April of 2022, in his motorcade, struck and killed a 29-year-old pregnant woman. They kept on driving. And there were no repercussions for this? How is this man even functional? My Lord, it is unbelievable that this man's even alive. And yet he was just allegedly reelected prime minister. But he's pro-European Union, even though they have nothing to do with the European Union. I'm not so sure Armenians are Europeans at all. I think they're their own, you know, it's an Indo-European language, but they're their own little world. I've always been very pro-Armenian. They're a heroic people. But everything in Armenia's economy is based on Russia and China. They have almost zero trade with the EU and certainly zero trade with the US. But this guy was installed to bring the country into the European Union somehow. And he deliberately lost, and we'll get into this a little bit later, but when you're widely believed to have deliberately lost a war where Armenians were forced to flee a very important area, and you get reelected, it is absolutely impossible. And, of course, there's a lot of repercussions for that. And that's the issue here we're dealing with today. So the elections were on the 7th, and that's why we're talking about it.
Well, it's not just you that's saying that this election was dodgy. There's lots of other officials in the opposition, and we'll hear all about that as we get into our notes here. Prior to the election, Horizon Armenia Weekly stated, foreign-funded financial flows are increasingly concentrated within pro-government, political, media and so-called civil society structures. Media outlets under state control have nearly monopolized the public space, while coordinated propaganda networks impose a single uniform narrative. internal security and police forces are increasingly used to enforce political obedience. Opposition figures are subjected to selective arrests, prolonged detention, and judicial persecution, measures that are not justice but intimidation. Armenia is gradually taking on the characteristics of an administrative police state, where coercion replaces free political competition. The system of control has recently received an explicit state and financial expression. According to publicly available information, approximately 3 billion drams, around $8 million, collected from citizens' taxes, were by a top-secret order of Pashinyan distributed as bonuses to secure electoral influence. This is no longer a matter of political interpretation. It is state-level vote buying, whereby elections cease to be a democratic process and become a pre-planned deception. This system of control is now being codified into law. In an extraordinary session of the National Assembly, Pashinyan and his team rushed through amendments to the electoral code that severely restrict independent election observation, circulating the draft barely a day in advance and forcing it through under a 24-hour procedure. The changes were made without consultation with the opposition, domestic observer organisations, civil society or international bodies such as the OSCE and the Venice Commission. The opposition Hayastan Armenia Alliance boycotted the session, warning that the amendments are designed to purge elections of independent scrutiny and replace it with loyal government-aligned observers. ARF MP Artsvik Minasyan warned that under these rules, observers and potentially journalists could lose accreditation for assessments deemed politically inconvenient. This is not reform. It is the legal engineering of a controlled election. Well, I have a couple of questions about this, because on the one hand, he says that this is all publicly available information. And then on the other hand, he says, well, this was a secret deal that was done. So do you know what's going on here, Matt, with this buying? Because, I mean, you would imagine giving out $8 million, and you could trace that from the taxes, how does he then say, well, this was a secret deal that was done? Was the money that was on top of that, was that just sort of like the icing on the cake? I mean, what was going on there? It's a question that I have.
He does this every election. The meeting itself wasn't, you know, necessarily public, but certainly the results were. But he does this all the time. You know, important elites, he buys off with money. Even citizen groups, I think the last election, he promised a specific amount of money for anyone to vote for him. He does this all the time. It's when we talked about how vote buying and vote fraud, like say in the Biden election and all that. This guy just rounded up his political opponents and put them in jail for a while. This is like it's somewhat along the lines of Ukraine, except Armenia isn't necessarily at war at the moment. But the EU, even the EU is getting very, very worried. You know, they're supporting him. They love him. But they have a tough time defending him. In fact, they don't deny what he's doing here. He knows how unpopular he is. He knows that he would get maybe 5%, which he got in previous elections, before he even became prime minister years ago. That was probably the most he ever got. Therefore, he has to just arrest his opponents. He has to buy people off. He's searching, you know, private emails from people, seeing if they don't like him, Facebook, all this. People are getting arrested for this kind of thing. Armenians are known for being very protest-oriented. And he used to be the guy, 20 years ago that was leading the protest. Now that other people are, he is freaking out. In reality, it's shocking if he got more than 5% of the vote in reality. To get 49% in after everything he's done, you have to talk about bribery, arrests, everything. That's the deal with that meeting.
Well, it seems to be locking up the opposition. I mean, that's just normal European Union activity, isn't it? I'm thinking of Greece.
That's right.
They locked up Golden Dawn for 12, 13 years under charges, I think, of being a criminal gang. They locked up the person that won the Romanian election recently. They said that he was a Russian agent, and they locked him up. I mean, there's probably more. I think in Moravia, I think they had instances of it happening there. And say that this new Armenian prime minister, Pashinko, he's pro-European Union. But they had the same in Georgia, didn't they? They had this pro-European Union faction that were being funded by the European Union. And they had these fake protests. And it was basically the students that were going out supporting the European Union, not the rest of Georgia. And it was backed with money from the European Union. So I should imagine that it's one way of trying to subvert these countries, because they know that they're friendly with Russia. Georgia is friendly with Russia. Armenia is friendly with Russia. And this is another point that I should have brought up, really, when you were doing your introduction there, Matt, when you were saying that Israel is in there with Azerbaijan. And then you've also got Russia's gas pipelines. But you've also got Turkey as well, which is a backer of Azerbaijan. So, I mean, that's three very strange bedfellows there, Russia, Turkey, and Israel. I mean, surely Turkey and Israel, Israel have said Turkey's the next place on the hit list. They only said that a few weeks back. So it just seems a little bit strange to me that they're all tied in together in Azerbaijan there. Any comments on that? And also on the quote that I just read?
Well, you know, I wrote my first article on the question, it started in 2020. He became was installed in prime minister after it was essentially a coup, a cover revolution in 2018. He was supported. You know, you're absolutely correct to say this is a bizarre situation. 2020 was before what Israel was recently accused of doing, and obviously, you know, genocide in Gaza. We know that. It's a fact of life. Turkey has cut all ties with Israel, and yet still remains an ally of Azerbaijan, very close ally, and Israel still has bases in Azerbaijan. So I suppose they look the other way, or just say, well, in this case, it's okay because we hate Armenians. And so that's, you know, it's just they make an exception in this case. But that was going on in 2020. For the first time, Armenia lost the war, and it was lost because Pashinyan lost it on purpose. I can hardly wrap my brain around it. But the evidence for that is absolutely overwhelming. And it's also widely believed in Armenia itself. They just have to make an exception in these cases. You know, I said before, in 2007, he tried to run for president. Now, the president there is almost symbolic. He got 1.7% of the vote. 2017, he got 7%. It's probably the highest he's ever gotten in legitimately. His party was called the Way Out Alliance. Way Out. He changes parties and movements every few years. And 2017 is when he promised the citizens at the Capitol 10,000 drams if they voted for him. But because of these low numbers, instead of admitting defeat, he organized mobs, tried to attack the Capitol. Of course, he paid them. And he claimed the elections were rigged. Again, we're talking about this. This is almost, you know, it's Kafkaesque. And when he was about to be arrested, where did he go? He hid in the American embassy. And he is always in and out of the American embassy where he's getting his orders. And after he was installed, there was an American-supplied poll that said 98% of Armenians support his political movement. Yeah, he went from single digits a year ago to 98% in 2020. It is absolutely bizarre. But the fact is, the main issue, Armenia could have fought Azerbaijan. They were successful in the past, but the prime minister was ordered to lose that war, and he did. And the evidence for it is absolutely impressive. We could talk about that now. We could talk about that later.
Well, let's talk about it when we come up to that part where it gets discussed here. Getting back to the notes, in Armenia, the pro-EU liberal wing won the election, but the result was not as easy as expected. Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan secured another five-year term, but his position is more fragile than ever. He is increasingly pressured by the country's illiberal sectors, generating great concern about the future of Armenian domestic stability. I'm just going to pause there, Matt. What does he mean by illiberal sectors? Does he mean people? Does he mean right wing people that are against liberal democracy, that sort of thing? What does it mean?
Yeah, this author, he says some good things, but he's often clueless. Illiberal sectors, I don't know what he means. I guess this is liberalism. These are European standards. This is how liberalism functions. Liberalism can't take power except by the barrel of a gun or by fraud or something like that. He doesn't explain what an illiberal sector is, but he just doesn't – he's naive. He doesn't understand that this is how liberalism functions.
Well, I guess we could be classed as illiberal. We're against liberal democracy quite a lot of the time.
That is right.
We talk about that. So I guess they would say that we were illiberal. Pashinyan's party, but we don't have any power. So I mean, do these the illiberal sector, do they have any power over in Armenia? Is there a powerful right wing over there? Is that what he's implying?
Well, the church for the first time in Armenia, the church is very powerful there, very popular there. Wants this guy gone, and he's arrested a few bishops too. He even's gone so far as to say that he should start appointing bishops directly. After the loss of Nagorno-Karabakh, the church just said, this guy he needs to go. And the protests were huge against him. The church was at the center of that. So he really hates them. But when all the Christian, churches were burnt to the ground and destroyed when the Azeris took over Nagorno-Karabakh, that's gone now. It doesn't exist anymore. And, of course, like everyone else, they blame Pashinyan with good reason. So the one liberal sector absolutely is the Apostolic Church of Armenia. And they are vehemently opposed to Pashinyan. And he's got a few of them arrested.
Yeah, that's got to be, isn't it? That's what he's referring to there. Pashinyan's party, Civil Contract, and he changes party names every election, won the parliamentary elections on June 7th with 49.81% of the vote. His official popularity is 11% as of May 2025. The numbers show a very small advantage over the opposition parties, indicating that although Pashinyan managed to emerge victorious, his popularity is declining substantially. This scenario suggests that his new term will be marked by a delicate political situation, attempting to balance his pro-EU interests with popular pressure and opposition agendas. Or what does it mean, pro-EU interests? Gay pride? Mass immigration? I mean, is that the sort of EU interest he has, or is it sort of free market interests?
This man, by his own admission, and by even, the Prime Minister of Canada, people like, they all say that this man has no principles. Or he is a pragmatist. He's a centrist. He's an aggressive centrist. That's been the name. He has no principles whatsoever.
So that's his European Union interests. He has no principles.
That's his European interests.
And the EU has no principles. That's his
He does
interests.
What he's told.
Right. Well, the elections were severely criticised by international analysts and also by members of the opposition. The Pashinyan government has taken authoritarian measures against its political opponents, including arrests, censorship, and personal sanctions. It's rather like Europe, isn't it? Arrests and censorship of the opposition. The goal was to eliminate any and all forms of opposition coalition, thus guaranteeing the government hegemony. Her strongest opposition public figure is businessman Samvel Karapetyan, supported by patriotic sectors and organizations linked to the Armenian Apostolic Church, which has been suffering strong persecution from the Pashinyan regime. Karapetyan's party, Strong Armenia, came in second place in all the elections, and it is now expected that Pashinyan will impose even more restrictions on the organization and its members. Karapetyan is currently being prosecuted on a baseless charge of attempted coup d'etat due to his participation in the anti-government protests that took place in the country between 2024 and 2025. He is accused of being sponsored by Moscow to promote regime change in Armenia. Such narratives, which have never been corroborated with concrete evidence, are deeply endorsed by the pro-EU Western media. Six candidates from the Strong Armenia Party were arrested in a clear attempt by Pashinyan to neutralize the political strength of Karapetyan's organization. This destabilized the party's election campaign and harmed its chances in the race. Not only that, Karapetyan also openly claims that the government falsified the vote count. According to him, once they realized that Pashinyan was at clear risk of defeat, the Armenian authorities simply stopped counting the votes and decided to invent numbers to present to the public. His words are endorsed by several local and international analysts who doubt Pashinyan's ability to win the elections legitimately. When they saw that their results were falling sharply every minute, they stopped counting, and we have no idea what figures they will present in the morning, he said. Interesting that they say he'd been arrested for taking part in these protests, but it was a coup d'etat, but they haven't got any evidence of him being involved in any violence or anything like that, just taking part in an anti-government protest. You would imagine that anti-government protests were permitted, surely. But it does seem very similar to what we see in the EU, with opposition being arrested, opposition being censored, not allowed to voice their criticism of certain government policies. It does seem very totalitarian to me. What do you make of what the opposition has to say here, Matt?
When I said official polling, I meant, you know, Armenia-based media polls, including state-owned media polls, have this guy in single digits. It reminds me a lot of Boris Yeltsin in the 90s, where his popularity ratings were in negative numbers, if that's even possible. And yet he gets massive votes in the election. Obviously, it's a total fraud. He destroyed or helped destroy the entire Russian economy. What this guy has done is insult Armenia and destroyed Armenian territory, giving it over to the Turks, whether it be the Azeris, but the Azeris had full Turkic support, driving Armenians out of their homes, and the economy's in a free fall. And he gets reelected, 49% of the vote. It's inconceivable that this is a legitimate election. I don't need vote counting. I don't need computer manipulation. Yeah, I'm sure that's all there, too. Yeah, and of course, he's arrested everybody. I know that. But it is simply inconceivable that someone who's done that, those things, is responsible for those things, and is anti-Russia in a very pro-Russian country, it can even exist there, let alone get elected to anything. That he gets more than 3% of the vote is incredible. But in previous elections, before he was prime minister, he was getting, 1, 2, 3, 4% of the vote. There is no way it comes. But, his first cabinet, when he was installed in 2018, half of them weren't even Armenians. It reminds me of Georgia or Ukraine after the Orange Revolution. Some of these people were just members of NGOs. He was bringing them into his cabinet. He doesn't really know any better. I'm not insulting him when I say he's an ignoramus. I mean it. He doesn't seem to understand basic how politics works, how international relations work. So this author says his popularity is dropping. His popularity has been gone. He is it is so outrageous that this man could even function. I mentioned the hitting the pregnant woman and not even going back. That's just one example of what this man is. No repercussion. 49% of the vote? Absolutely unbelievable. I don't need. Yeah, he arrested everybody. Vote manipulation, vote buying. Yeah, it is. That's all fine and good to talk about that. But even without it, there is no way that this guy could get more than 5% of the vote legitimately.
Getting back to the notes, in fact, it is also necessary to consider that the EU's public support for Pashinyan is yet another sign that the elections may have been illegitimate. Brussels is known to intervene in electoral processes and internal affairs of countries that are candidates for the European bloc. Something similar happened recently in Moldova, as well as in the Maidan-like coup attempt in Georgia. It is very likely that the EU interfered in the Armenian internal political process in order to consolidate the country's pro-Western position, creating a focal point of anti-Russian tensions in the Caucasus. Furthermore, Pashinyan's growing authoritarianism shows that he was indeed willing to take illegal measures to guarantee his electoral victory. Faced with declining popularity, declining from 5% to 1%, I think he had before that, the Armenian leader adopted an increasingly dictatorial stance, transforming the country into a dangerous place for opposition supporters. It is now expected that Pashinyan will further harden his dictatorial measures against the opposition. Furthermore, strong European support will serve to balance his lack of internal legitimacy. But this will not be an easy task. Weakened and with little popular support, the Armenian leader will face deep pressure from a people increasingly tired of irrational pro-Western policies. Moreover, the Armenian people are known for their Christian faith, which is why the government's persecution of public figures in the Armenian church brings even more internal tensions. It is also important to remember that Pashinyan, at the beginning of his leadership, endorsed Armenian nationalists to foster anti-Russian sentiments in the country. And you've put here, Matt, that this doesn't make sense as Armenian nationalism is pro-Russian. Now, however, these nationalists are mostly against the government since Pashinyan refused to support Nagorno-Karabakh and initiated talks with Azerbaijan and Turkey, countries hated by local Turkophobic nationalists due to historical rivalries. And you've written again there, rivalries, the genocide was a rivalry. The loss of entire Armenian areas is just a rivalry. So I guess you could say that this journalist is minimizing these issues. But what was going on here then? If the Pashinyan was endorsing Armenian nationalists, have they turned against him now? Were they in his pay? I mean, what's going on there? It seems contradictory to me a little bit.
Well, that's because he is contradictory. He contradicts himself all the time. He is somebody, if you look, just look at his picture. Here's one case where you could judge a book by its cover. I don't think he's really smart enough to do a lot on his own. Basic intelligence. Armenia is a high IQ population. I don't think they're a European country at all. They're certainly an Aryan country, but I don't think they're a European country. Which, given its location and is almost zero trade with the EU, he simply does what he's told or does what he's told his interests are. When he was on the street in the early 2000s, he was talking about, we're going to smash the Azerbaijani scum and defend our people. The minute he takes over, it's a totally different story. He imposed IMF austerity on the country that he never mentioned before. He does simply what he's told. Messing with the church is political death. It is very popular. This is one of the great arguments for ethnic churches. Armenia is an ancient civilization, and the connection between the church and the nation goes back to ancient times, and messing with it is just political death. But, why not? I mean, he's already in reality, 1% popularity, so why not? The church is, when they speak, people listen. See, even if you don't necessarily believe in Christianity, you still love the church on a civilizational level. Messing with that, yeah, it's typical. He just doesn't really, you know, he reminds me a lot of Zelensky, but not as devious, not as intelligent. And there's no, at the moment, no war going on to justify any of this stuff. Everything he does is very ham-handed. So, yes, he is contradictory. Because he has no principles, he'll do something one day and then the opposite the next day, whatever is in his interests. But losing, you know, Nagorno-Karabakh or Artsakh is the other name, that came into prominence in the early 90s. The Soviet Union was falling apart. I remember I was in college when that happened. And it's gone now. It's been taken over by the Azeris. It's been Islamified. The country was outraged because he did it on purpose. He lost the war on purpose. The evidence for it is overwhelming. And therefore, this man, he should have been driven out of the country. Yes, there's protests all the time. That's true. They stormed the Capitol and everything else. But 49% of the vote, this is what, you know, it's just what they do in the EU, although it's a bit more extreme. It's so much more obvious, so much more blatant. And yes, I did mention that Armenian nationalist is pro-Russian by definition. You know, look at where Armenia is. They have many Islamic peoples around them. Going back a century and a half, they sought Russian protection because they're simply too small to do it on their own. And they've always been pro-Russian. But in the state media, or at least media he has control over, he's eliminated Russian language programs. He's done everything. You know, if I sat down and figured out, okay, what do I do to piss off a population, in this case, the Armenian population, and I come up with a list, he has done all of that stuff. And yet I'm supposed to believe he won 49% of the vote legitimately. And there needs to be a military coup over there. Now, it is true that he has totally purged the military, part of one of the reasons that the Armenia lost. But even still, there has to be a coup to get rid of this guy. And I'm shocked, and this is on the Armenian military, that they haven't acted yet to get rid of this guy. There's no connection between Armenia and Europe. All their trade is either, you know, Russia or China, India, Turkey. That's where their trade is. Maybe 2 or 3% with European countries. I think it's 1.8% with the U.S. It doesn't matter. You know, so their entire economy is aimed at Russia and the East. So if they're going to move to the EU, they're going to be totally wiped out. It's what happened with Ukraine in the 90s and or even still going on today. That's what really got me. And you said it's got my goat. Damn it, it's got my vote. Goat. Absolutely. This author is just, I think, just naive. Maybe he's coming across it for the first time. He was asked to write about it or something like that. But you know, he doesn't see the extremity of the situation.
Getting back to the notes. The day before the election, 6 opposition candidates were detained and charged with money laundering, just as the campaign gained momentum. This isn't democracy, it's classical administrative leverage at its crudest, political scientist Migran Shazadian told Sputnik, commenting on Sunday's highly contentious vote. From intimidation and smear campaigns to manipulation of electoral lists, the vote saw all the, quote, dirty tricks typical for the post-Soviet space, close quote, he says. The victory of Prime Minister Pashinyan's Civic Contract Party cannot be called fair, as it was achieved not so much from popular support as by clearing the political field. Even then, it got only 49.85% of the vote, which says something about his true popularity. Did the election live up to Pashinyan's promises about observing European standards? That's pure propaganda, Shazadian says, but the EU isn't particularly interested about the methods used. They have their own interests. They need Pashinyan to continue to orient the country towards the West. How he treats his opponents is secondary. What will the vote mean for Armenia's political course? Hard to say. One moment he talks about European integration, the next he suddenly recalls Armenia's alliance with Russia, the next he plays at a neutrality that doesn't exist. What is Pashinyan's foreign policy? It is a reaction to the current moment, not a strategy. Putting aside all other abuses, the material promises made by civil contract, like pension increases, fall under very specific black and white wording in the criminal code, Tigran Urakanyan, chairman of the opposition alliance party, told Sputnik. Article 219, electoral bribe, carries a 6-year prison sentence for offering material benefits in the course of a vote for individuals and 8 years for an organized group like RICO in the US. Then there is the vote itself. From blatant, unprecedented instances of voting process violations to the comparison of ballot protocols at local polling stations to the Central Election Commission's official results. The core of the problem is not even so much in the voting process, but the comparison of local results with the final protocols. That's where problems are bound to arise, and if the opposition doesn't address this, then we have problems within the opposition. Does the EU care about Armenia sticking to European standards in voting? Not a chance, Urakanyan says. There are no standards. There is only one standard, the expulsion of Russia from the region, and first and foremost, from Armenia. And ultimately, sacrificing the Armenian state so that perhaps one day the formulation to the last Ukrainian will be reformulated to the last Armenian. France's special Viginum unit tracks and blocks online statements that contradict Armenia's official narrative, something that was endorsed by President Macron during his recent visit to the Armenian capital, Yerevan. Journal du Dimanche reports any information compromising Armenian Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan has been passing through additional filters monitored by French cyber officers, and obviously also eliminated by them. So there's a blatant European Union connection there. All the information goes through France first in order to censor what's actually being said to it. I mean, it really is incredibly corrupt and also inexplicably tied to the EU. The only reason they can have for being involved in this is just because they want another puppet to use against Russia. I mean, that's what I can see here, Matt. What are your final thoughts on all of this today and what's been going on over there?
Well, there is another issue, and you're absolutely right in what you said. There are, as far as we know, about 12 biological laboratories run by the U.S. and the EU in Armenia. There's been unexplained breakouts of various diseases like measles and stuff in the capital. A few journalists, including one Bulgarian woman, Diane Ziza, talked about it way back in 2018. The U.S. doesn't even deny this. Newland doesn't even deny this years ago. After the coup in 2018, there were 12 biolabs that were established immediately, staffed by the Pentagon. These were weapons facilities. There's no question about it. And they built one very close to the Russian 102nd Russian division, the military base with 4,000 men. Pashinyan wants that base gone. He wants all the Russians gone. The only reason the country has not been invaded by Turkey is because of these bases. There's been a few breakouts in Armenia because they're not being, standards are not being maintained in these places. There's all kinds of things, Ebola, monkeypox, the Marburg virus, all of these things. And having a guy like Pashinyan there allows this country to be used a lot like Ukraine to experiment on. Russian military has been talking about this. Of course, it's gone on deaf ears. You remember the great Lieutenant General Igor Kirillov? He was the first one to expose them in Ukraine and in Armenia. And not long afterwards, he was murdered by a Ukrainian hit squad. So that's another reason they needed someone like this. A normal politician would never allow this of any background. the deliberate loss of the war, which I think almost every Armenian believes, there was a massive buildup of Azeri forces on his border. He did nothing about it. Military intelligence does nothing all day long, but look at what Azerbaijan does. They did nothing about it. They used drones very early. The first time drones were used in mass quantities, they didn't seek to counter it. The general staff suffered dismissals. You know, he purged the general staff, especially those trained in Moscow. Because they, you know, they've won battles in the past. You know, you would think that they would plan their defenses around that. But when the shooting started, the Defense Department simply did not respond. I mean, there were massive, massive buildup, warehouses, fuel supplies, everything. You could see them with binoculars from Armenia, and the government did absolutely nothing. The massive amounts of weapons that Azerbaijan was buying wasn't noticed by, deliberately not noticed by Armenia. It's impossible not to notice this. Russian intelligence was telling them, begging them, please do something about this. And Pashinyan broke all contacts with them. The air defense system in Karabakh was left to rot. It was out of date at some point. Didn't even work anyway at that point. Azerbaijan was buying the top-notch stuff from all over the world. You know, and all of this was done deliberately by Pashinyan, getting rid of the generals who won the war in the 90s, the first Nagorno-Karabakh war, and some of the low-level fighting that Armenia has won since then. All of them are gone, and he did that on purpose, partially because they threatened him, and partially because, you know, he was told, Azerbaijan, being an Israeli colony, in essence, is going to win this. And he said, okay. And there's even parts of Armenia proper now being taken by Azerbaijani or Azeri forces, and he does nothing. You know, the slogan over there is that this is the final end of the Armenian genocide. This is kind of finishing the job. So you have biolabs. You have an aggressive Azerbaijan with Turkish support and big Israeli support. You have 100,000 Armenians driven from their homeland. All of this accepted and promoted by the election winner. And the biolabs and all of this. It seems that the end game is to simply wipe Armenia off the map. They are inconvenient. They're an ally of Iran. Or they were, not anymore, of course, an ally of Russia going back to, you know, centuries. And that can't be. So somehow they're claiming now to be a European state. And by the way, that's not an insult on my part. They're an elite, high IQ, ancient civilization. I just don't think they're European necessarily. They're West Asian. You know, it's very easy to argue all of this because it's hardly secret. I think the end goal is to simply wipe them off the map. But the outbreaks, I think it's been in the early 2020s, it was 786 people were infected. It was a new kind of measles that was leaked. And some of these biological weapons facilities are located, almost all of them, in fact, near schools. That can't be a coincidence. This is one of the worst situations. The extremity here is overwhelming. And I think there's a full genocidal policy in effect here. And Pashinyan is at the center of it. And they need an idiot like him. Because even a color revolution guy, like we normally talk about, even those guys would start to say, okay, no, this is too much. No, Pashinyan doesn't understand. He's the perfect guy to use. He's not a drunk like Yeltsin, but he simply is just dumb. And because Pashinyan supports the West somehow, he knows he could do whatever he wants. And the press won't talk about it. The biolabs is a new wrinkle that I talked about in the early part of this decade. Not to mention, separating Armenia from Russia means wiping out the economy. So, and on top of all of that, if that's not enough, he is bringing in Western entertainment. He personally organized a concert by Snoop Dogg in Yerevan back in the early part of this decade. He's apparently a big fan of his. Believe it or not. Yeah, American pornography, American TV. He's trying to Americanize the young people. Or is being told to do so. Yeah, they're being Americanized, and that's never a good thing. I think the end goal is to simply destroy them as a civilization. And the only solution, like in Ukraine, is for the military to finally take over. And restore ties with Russia and do what they can to right the wrongs of Pashinyan. But this man is in a league of his own, in an absolute league of his own, compared with other color revolution dictators.
Well, we often complain about our politicians, but at least they're not as bad as Armenia's. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.